This is Lisa K. Miller for the Western Kentucky University Libraries Oral History Project. Today is Thursday, June 13th, 2013, and we're in Franklin, Kentucky at the Simpson County Archives talking with Jean Allman. Jean, can you start, please, by background and what brought you to WKU Libraries?
Well, I was born in Clay, Kentucky in Webster County in August of 1927, so you know I was a Depression baby. I lived through the Depression. Our home in Clay burned, and we moved to Bowling Green to live with my grandparents, and we never left Bowling Green. I have four siblings, two of who have passed away, and three of us are graduates of Western. Mm-hmm. I began my work career at the telephone company in Bowling Green. I worked there from 1944 to 1952.
What was the name of that company?
Southern Bell, and Telegraph.
Yeah.
And then I married in 1952 and moved to Franklin, and I have been here ever since. In 1967, I had some major surgery, and it was obvious that I needed something to do, and I'd always been interested in libraries. So I started at Western, taking just one class a semester. My first teacher was Anita Sanders, and it was the first class that she had taught, and the class that I took was children's literature. Mm. And then from there, the rest is history. Of course, at that time, the Library Science Department just had two full-time faculty, Imogene Simpson and Miss Vera Grinstead.
Vera Grinstead.
We brought in more later.
Mm-hmm.
And as I began to work through the hours and get enough, I had work at the Bowling Green Business University because I had worked in the business field. And I took one course that took care of the year's work that I had at BU. Mm-hmm. And then I finished my degree at Western in Library Science, and it just seemed natural to segue into a job there.
Mm-hmm.
And the dean at the time was Dean Harden, Henry Harden.
Henry Harden. Mm-hmm.
And Earl Wassum was also there, and Bob Reese.
B-O-B Reese?
Mm-hmm, R-E-E-S, Bob Reese. I began work at the Science Library in the fall of 1974, and I don't think it would be breaching a trust to say that I was sent there to work with the students. It seemed that the librarian there at the time preferred to work with the faculty, and I was sent to have better relations with the students as they needed so many things there at the Science Library. We had all of the chemistry, all of the biology, all of the physics, all of the math, engineering, technology, and some of the emerging departments, health and safety, were coming in there. And there were many of the things that if you weren't interested and didn't care about it, you wouldn't look into it. And there were so many indexes that were there that you had to become familiar with, the Science Citation Index and Chem Abstracts and Biological Abstracts and Mathematical Reviews, that it was not an easy job. But I loved it, and I sat down in that desk in the middle of the Science Library, and I sat there for 20 years.
Mm-hmm.
At the time, Virginia Dent Neal was the head librarian, and the clerk's name at that time was Marge, and her last name escapes me. I want to find that out because she was a big help to me. And, of course, Susan Todd was there already. Betty Miller Nichols came on board as the clerical in about 1978, and she and I retired together. I worked an extra year so we could go out together, and sadly Betty just passed away this month, so we have lost her. Susan is still in the library, and Virginia is still in Bowling Green. I was there for 20 years. I do not know how the Science Library got into Thompson Complex, Central Wing, Room 125. I know how it left, and we can talk about that later.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know how it got into, how that was started down there. I guess one of the main things that we did, and I'm sure that others have talked about this, at the time that I began work at the Science Library, we were already in the throes of getting ready to go automated. We still had a manual system.
Mm-hmm.
We used Gaylord for the punch cards for the IDs. It just so happens that my brother was the computer person was Pat Custard, who worked with that, and it was a standing joke. Pat would say, "When are we going to run a test run on these cards? We don't know if this program's going to work or not." And George said, "It'll work. We'll do it at the end." So we had 325,000 cards in there before we ever made a test run.
Oh, my.
And, of course, at that time, Nelda Sims and David Runner were both already there, and they're still around.
Yes.
That was a big deal. And Deborah Hubotter was the one who came to the science library. She was the science librarian.
Can you spell that?
H-U-E-B-O-T-T-E-R, Deborah Hubotter. Okay. And she was the one who came to the science library every week and file the cards above the rod so we could drop them and have our cards when as they were done. And, of course, the books had to be sent from the science library over to circulation.
Yes.
And then down into cataloging so the new labels could be put on them.
So they had to travel around.
And the OCR labels put on.
Yes.
And all of those good things had to be done. That was the main project, I think, that we had. But then, of course, the culmination of the whole thing was when we moved the science library to the 8th and 9th floor of Cravens in the fall and spring of 1994. The science library in the Thompson complex was configured so it was on three different levels. The study area was on the first floor. Then you went down and up to the stacks that had the books, and then you went down and down to the journals. Mm. And we had a huge, huge number of books there. And of course, as everybody knows, during this time is when computer science was emerging and QA76 grew and grew, and we made a career out of shifting books from one location to the other to keep them. And of course, it was the time of the Watson Crick in the science when that was coming in. DNA was coming in.
Tell me what Watson Crick is.
That was expanding. There were just so many, we just had to keep moving and shifting all the time.
Can you tell me what Watson Crick was?
That was DNA, and that was it was in the early...
That was the discovery of DNA.
Yes.
Okay.
And, of course, as I've already said, we had the computers that, as each language came in, we had to get books. We started with BASIC, and then we went to COBOL, and on and on and on, UNIX, and we had to work with those. I served under four presidents while I was in the library. Dero Downey was the president when I was hired, and of course Dero was a friend of our family, and I always felt a closeness to him, and we've lost him now, as you well know. And then of course Donald Zacharias and Kern Alexander, and Dr. Tom Meredith was the president when I retired. And I was very fond of Dr. Meredith, and I do have a picture of all of us that was taken at our retirement party. And the only one I can think of that retired the same year I did, that got their picture made that night, was Wilma Adcock, that was in technical services. She retired that year. Now, Sally Ann Koenig Strickler was one of my department heads. And then, of course, the last several years, Brian Coots was the department head. And Dr. Bender was the last director that I worked for. Just one little side that I don't know if anyone has told you about that I've always found right funny. When we got our ID cards and we were supposed to be able to show them, we were having a little problem at the circulation desk at Helm. And they told the checkers that people who came in had to have an ID. They couldn't come in without one. And one day Miss Margie Helm came to the library. And Miss Margie didn't have an ID. And I do not know who the checker was, and that's probably fortunate.
Yeah.
It might have been Miss Gossam, I don't know. But anyway, and she says, "That's my picture on the wall."
That's my ID.
That's my ID right there. Well, no, that didn't cut any ice with them. But it was the Margie Helm Library, and of course, since I'm the age that I am, I remember when the Margie Helm Library was the EA Diddle, when it was the gym.
Yes.
When we played basketball, when we played basketball in there. And now you
we
tell
still
me.
Still have our jump circle.
Is the jump circle gone?
It's still there. It went in. It's preserved. It's,
well,
the floor is carpeted.
Well, now you know they said they weren't going to remove it, but then when I read about the Alumni Center, it appeared from the write-up of the Alumni Center that it had gone over there. And
well,
I was terribly upset.
I know. It's still in the library.
All
yes.
Right. All right. Well, yeah. That's very, very good. And of course, during the time that I was at Western, we saw the very beginnings of online searching. Mm-hmm. We only had two major vendors that we worked with at that time, and not too many databases that we could search, and not all the librarians were trained to search.
Right.
And now, of course, with the emergence of all the online searching capabilities with our computers, everybody can search and go for the throat. You don't have to know protocols and parentheses and brackets, and
yes, exactly.
you can just go right for the word to find it.
User-friendly.
But I was working in interlibrary loan one summer, and a lot of the students in education had to do bibliographies for their mm-hmm. classes, and most of them were graduate students. They were going for their rank one, and they had to do bibliographies, and I never shall forget the people would come in there, and they'd give you their subject, and you would get on Eric, which had a pretty good index early, and they would sit there and they'd say, oh, my bibliography is being born. They wouldn't look at anything. They'd take that. And
yeah,
that
was great.
So we were very helpful to them. But
mm-hmm.
Now I haven't been to the library in a few years to really use it as a patron. I'm sure that there are people who are completing term papers with never darkening the door because so many of the periodicals are online. All the indexes are online. And you're not required to turn in index cards to prove that
mm-hmm.
you did the search. But one of the main things that posed a problem all the time in the sciences was you had to publish
yes.
to be promoted or get a good raise. And it was always imperative that you find something that nobody else had reported on. You couldn't. It had to be original research.
Mm-hmm.
And one of my favorite people in the whole world in the chemistry department was Norm Holy. Holy, H-O-L-Y.
Thank you.
And he would come in, he'd say, I want you to look in chem abstracts and find everything you can about so-and-so. Well, of course, he didn't give you a clue because that would have... He'd come back in about a week and he'd say, well, what have you found? Well, Norm, I can't find a thing. Of course, never mind that the index runs behind the work
yes,
that's being
exactly.
published. But anyway, he'd come back another week. Well, what have you found? I can't find a thing. Well, after about the fourth trip, he'd say, good, I can do a paper on that because nobody has had it reported.
Right.
And one of the things that we started doing at the science library was the coal science program.
K-O-C-O-A-L,
coal.
Oh, coal.
And, of course, now I think you know from being there that it's out south of town. Dr. Wei Ping Pan is out there.
Do you know how to spell his name?
W-E-I-P-I-N-G-P-A-N, three names, Wei Ping Pan.
Thank you.
We hired professors that had degrees in coal science so that we could work on that, and we've done real well. But that was a real challenge to take care of that. And, of course, during that time, not only did the faculty have to do research, the students did, and they had to do thesis, and that had to be original projects. And it was during the time that I was there, of course, at Lyme disease and, we brought the death and dying department into health and safety. We did papers on euthanasia mm-hmm. and on assisted suicide.
Mm-hmm.
And to keep ahead of the literature was a challenge sometimes. And it's interesting to see that, especially in Index Medicus, that headings change.
Yes.
Like for years, it was dementia
mm-hmm.
or senility, and finally we got it changed to Alzheimer's.
Mm-hmm.
And AIDS was called something else mm-hmm. for a long time. And these were popular subjects that young people wanted to do papers on. Circadian rhythms became real popular during that time. But our job was to help the student be able to do their work in the way that was would be satisfactory to their professors. And when I was hired, I asked Dean Hardin, jokingly, I said, "Dean Hardin, how many hours a week do you expect me to work? That's important, you know."
Sure.
Since I was going to be driving 20 miles one way to work every day, and since parking was as bad then as it is now, you had to get there an hour early to get a parking place.
That's right. I have to do the same thing.
If you don't have one of those gated parking spaces that you pay an arm and a leg for. Anyway, I lost what I was talking about.
You asked him how many hours.
Oh, he said, we'll figure it on 37 and a half hours a week. But if it takes you 80 hours a week to do your job, I expect you to work 80 hours. And he did not stutter or take a step back when he said that.
Yeah.
And of course, you know, as a librarian, and anyone who works in reference and has, I suppose you still have kids coming through wanting library lessons and to be familiar with their indexes. There were times when you worked 80 hours a week at the first of the semester because everybody wanted a library lesson. They wanted their students to know what was there.
That could be a fax machine ringing.
But of course, during this time, Miss Hugh Mack was the one that was doing a lot of the cataloging cataloging unit. Of course, Linda Allen was down there at the time. Janice Massenet was down there. We had the Baker and Taylor approval plan, which was a way to gather books, but it wasn't the very best way because you never can get a perfect profile.
Yes.
And I think Diane Rutledge was in charge of this Baker and Taylor approval plan. And she worked real hard, and we had to go to the library and look at our books and mark whether we wanted them or not. And then, of course, we weren't the only person. The library representatives from each department went over and looked at them, and the dean would look at them. And there was always, it was a way to build the collection, but it wasn't the best way.
Mm-hmm.
But it was a way, but it was a way to build it. To my knowledge, we never had a book challenged at the Science Library, and that's unusual with the types of things that we have. It could be that our patrons didn't use the library that much, that they really didn't know what we had. We've never had any ghost stories, haunting places there. We had a dumb waiter that we sent the book trucks up and down to shelve the books that was in the workroom, and it went to the three levels. And we had a professor that was very difficult for him to get around.
Are you talking about in the science library?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yes. We had a patron down there, Dr. Farina.
Farina?
F-A-R-I-N-A, Donald K.
Okay.
And we would put him in a chair and let him go down into the stacks in that dumb elevator. Now, if the fire marshal or safety or OSHA or had ever gotten, we would probably have been nailed to the wall. But
you'd
now that's the way Dr. Farina got down. That was the only way he could get down there.
Yeah.
And he needed to use the material.
Mm-hmm.
I would say that the chemist use the library the most, with the exception of maybe health and safety when they were writing those little papers on euthanasia and assisted suicide and such as that. But most of the others maybe didn't need to. You'd see the math students in there gazing at the wall. And until I had a son who was a math major and chastised him for, he'd say, "Mother, I'm thinking.
Ah.
So I can set up this problem."
Yes.
And then I appreciated the fact that those math majors had to sit there and look at the wall.
Mm-hmm.
Now, one of the most successful orthopedic surgeons in town is Dr. Craig Beard.
Mm-hmm.
And Craig came through while I was there, and he was one of the most pleasant young men that you'll ever know. He was already married and had children, but he had a photographic memory. And on days that the chemistry students, especially organic chemistry, were having tests, in front of my desk, there was a nice, big coffee table that had four really nice lounge chairs.
Mm-hmm.
Craig would come in and sit down in one of those chairs and just gaze off. And the rest of the chemistry students were running all over the building. What's this? What's that? How do you do this? How do you do that? And, of course, he'd go in and ace the test, and they'd be the ones that had trouble. Dr. Farina taught a class in kinetics that I believe 70 would have been an A. But we had one girl that was really wanting into medical school so bad. They were under so much pressure to get into medical school. And she made a 30 one time. And unfortunately, she caught Dr. Farina in the library. And Dr. Farina wasn't about to go back to his office to talk to her. He stood right outside our door there by a filing cabinet. You think that all you know is 30% of this material and you're entitled to an A? Your patients will die while you're reaching a decision on how to treat them.
Oh, my.
Bad. Bad. But Western had a very, very high success rate of people that were accepted into medical school. Louisville and UK. And most of them learned how, either from their professors or from those who had preceded them and handed down the word. Most of them learned how to take over the interview when they were interviewed. They would be the one that was questioning the professor that was going to seal their fate. But we did really well on that. We've already alluded to the fact that I remember at least two suicides during my tenure there. And now, I was in the science library, so I knew about John Cood after the fact, but I don't think we've ever figured out how he got the window open, because those windows were supposed to be sealed. And he was a big man, and we don't know how he got through. Now, some of those who saw it, and I think you said Jeannie Butler saw it, so she was able to tell you, but it's very sad. You have to be very troubled, and I love going to work every day. I had 7 students each semester. They worked 15 hours a week. They worked on the desk, shelving, helping retrieve materials for interlibrary loans. One of the biggest things that we had at our circulation desk, nearly all of the teachers in the sciences would put their exams on file. And you could go in and check them out and look at them and see tests that had been given before and be ready for them. So that was one of the biggest things that we had to do. We had a copy machine. When I first went down to the science library, the copy machine was in the front of the library just as you came in the door. Now, it's true that was handy for all the departments in the college that came from all around to use it, but we got a log jam there, people, in the way. So the copy room was moved to the back of the library, and that was one of the biggest things that we did, was fill the copy machine and shelf back the books that were pulled off. It's the same way as it is in periodicals, if
exactly
they're still used that much. Of course, a lot of that's history. There's not as much call for things as that. But the most interesting thing about us having to leave the science library, though, and bring it over to Cravens, is the fact that Ogden College has never used the space in the way that we hoped that they would. I think I told you when I talked to you the other day that my son's office is down in the inn, in the old science.
So that was the reason for moving it to Cravens, but they said they needed the space for something else.
And they've never used it.
And they've never used it.
And it was, I think it deprived the students, because it was handy. They could come in there and sit and study.
Sure.
They didn't have to walk across campus to the library. And I don't know if there's ever been a study made. I don't know if Miss Lucy Daniels or Gary Whittle or David Runner or any of those, Sheila Haas, any of those at Circulation have ever made a study on how much use they've had of those tests, because I believe in the main library they didn't hand them out individually. You went to the filing cabinet and pulled it and used it and then put it back.
So they're still on file.
Okay. Well. All right. Since I'm working in an archives now, and we do genealogy, of course, so much of the time, one of the most interesting professors was Dr. Lowell Shanks, who taught analytical chemistry. And every fall, his first assignment to his students was not an experiment. It wasn't to go in the lab and do something. It was to come to the library and trace the chemical genealogy of their major professor there at Western. Every chemistry teacher's name was given to them, and you had to trace them back to, of course, naturally, we had them. We went back to Lipscomb, and who went back to Linus Pauling. We had them. They went back to Nobel winners, and
so all the professors that they had had.
Every professor, and that was another thing that got to be kind of like the Eric searches, though, for the bibliographies in education.
Mm-hmm.
Before too long, they found out that I'd give them a lot of help on running their genealogy down, mm-hmm. but. They had to have the documentation, and that got them into the library and using the literature, and that's what they
that's
needed.
That's a brilliant assignment.
Have to do. I thought it was a good idea. I liked it.
Mm-hmm.
One of my workers is my minister now.
Uh-huh.
At my church here, Jerry Gifford was one of my students, and when he came to be interviewed for the pastorate, he had to remind me that he was one of my students because he said every day when he came in, he would go immediately and get the big book truck and go to the stacks and shelve, and he said sometimes I didn't even see him. He would sign his timesheet and leave. And then, of course, I have several that have really been successes, but Dr. Pat Jenkins, who is a family physician at Somerset, was one of my very favorite student workers in the time that I was there. And Pat had such a wonderful personality, and he was so good-looking, too.
Mm-hmm.
But he worked at Rough River every summer. And he'd always come in and say, "Now, Ms. Almond, I cannot come to work till after Labor Day because I cannot afford to miss my tips at Rough River." And he was so good looking and so good at his job that he made enough money in tips one summer to buy a new car.
Wow.
That's how good he was. That's how good.
That was Dr. Jenkins.
Yeah, Dr. Patrick Jenkins. He was from Fordsville, Kentucky, and he mm-hmm. practices at Somerset now. He was one of my... I had lots of good students, but some of them you just remember
mm-hmm.
better than others.
They stand out.
Yes. I went to a seminar one time years ago that one of the speakers told us that she tried to learn one new word every day and one new place in the world every day and read one deep thought, a philosophy or something that was not from the Bible, because this was a religious meeting, and then read something from the Bible. And I tried to encourage my students that worked for me, and one night late I looked up and I saw Rob Hornung over at the Unabridged Dictionary just looking, and I said, "Rob, what are you doing, son?" "I'm trying to learn my new word for the day."
Some of that pays off, you know, so you don't think it's sinking in maybe at the time.
That's
but
right.
It goes
That's
in
right.
the back and yeah.
That's right. But now, if you see any questions here that I haven't addressed that you want to know.
I love that story about Margie Helm.
Isn't that precious? And nobody's
story.
Told you that.
No one has told me that.
Could.
I have not spoken with anyone yet
but Peggy.
Who actually knew her,
oh.
who actually worked with her. Now, Peggy, she was already retired when Peggy
well, of course,
was there.
At the time that I came to Western, it was Nancy Solly, Imogene Foster, and Evelyn Thurman that were in the
yes.
reference room. All three of them were dead.
Mm-hmm.
I think one of the most interesting things that happened, I would say that over half of us were Western graduates, and they tried to start branching out and get people that
yes.
had... And then, of course, when we were trying so hard for ALA accreditation,
yes.
we were having to hire people that had ALA degrees. Now, Many of us, including Connie Foster, mm-hmm. went to Vanderbilt and took ours. Sally Ann Caney went to Strickler, went to Vanderbilt. I went to Vanderbilt and took ours and ours. Nelda Steen, who worked in serials cataloging, went to Vanderbilt. But the first person we hired who had a PhD was Gay Perkins.
I'm sorry, was that Nelda Steen or Nancy Steen?
Mm-hmm.
Was that Nelda Steen or Nancy Steen?
That was Nancy Steen.
Nancy Steen. Okay,
yeah, Nelda. Nancy Steen. Her husband was the pharmacist down there. But Gay Perkins was the first PhD that we hired.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, she's still there.
Yeah. No, she retired.
Did she?
A few years ago. John Gottfried is the business librarian
okay.
now. So
okay.
she's been gone for at least 3 years, I believe.
Well, of course, we've had some that have come and stayed a very short time, and we've had some that have come and stayed forever.
Mm-hmm.
Like Peggy Wright.
Yes.
And it's like Fina Simpson was in her era.
Right.
Alice Rowe, who we just buried Sunday,
Alice
was
Rowe.
Up on that floor. But now, we mentioned Connie Foster earlier. I am so pleased that she's the dean
mm-hmm.
because I think that she is. But she began in the dean's office
mm-hmm.
as a switchboard operator.
Yes, she told me about that. Now
and then,
tell us a little bit about...
And of course, she was in the office there. With Betty Brightup was in there at the time.
Betty?
Brightup, B-R-I-G-H-T-U-P, one word.
Okay.
And Betty's husband, Don, was the education librarian who was on the fifth floor. And Betty had charge of the students. And as I said, Connie was supposedly the switchboard operator.
But tell us about what a switchboard was.
we didn't really have a switchboard. I think all you did was answer the phone and punch to the extension. And I guess you still have a... No, I don't guess you do have a list. Yours is online. Yours is online now. We just punch. Mm-hmm. Because when I didn't realize who 7456122 was, David went online and showed me your picture. And, you know, they're all there. So... that person's, we no longer have need for a switchboard operator. You can just dial straight. Of course, we had a switchboard operator in the basement of the administration building that was for the university, and
yes.
I don't know if they still have that or
that
not.
That was the one with the plugs and the cords.
Yeah.
And,
but
yeah.
now, mm-hmm. Lucy Daniels, who worked at Circulation for years, daughter was the switchboard operator. And, of course, I don't think Lucy would be offended for me to say that she knew that she was the token black. In the library, because that was at the time when the heat was on to hire blacks. But as I've already said, Gay was the first person with a doctor's degree that we hired, and then of course Brian had a doctorate.
Mm-hmm.
And we brought back Dana Bowden, B-O-D-E-N, who was a Western graduate, but she had been to Nebraska. And she was brought in 1 year as the coordinator of library instruction.
Mm-hmm.
And she knew how to play the game a whole lot better than we did. The dean would call her to his office and say, I want you to do so-and-so. And Dana would say, that's not in my job description. I'm going back to my office. When you put it in my job description, call me back and I'll do it.
She must have learned that in Nebraska.
And, of course, she's back at Nebraska. And, of course, our answer to that, which was a little more... suave,
yes,
maybe.
Right, subtle.
You'd tell Fina to do something, and she'd say, that's not my job.
Fina Simpson was from Cuba.
Oh, yes. And mm-hmm. absolutely precious and talented. She could draw and make little signs. So,
mm-hmm.
She's not quite Alan Logsdon, let's put it that way.
Did you work with Alan?
Well, Alan's...
He's been there a while.
Well, yes, Alan's father was in the computer center where my brother was. He was on the physics faculty.
Ah.
Curtis and my brother. My brother was a physics professor, but he picked up...
his father was a physics professor?
Yes.
Ah.
But he went to the computer center and my brother went to the computer center. But I've known Alan forever. Alan's a lawyer.
Is he?
But he's another one of those. He's kind of like David Runner.
Mm-hmm.
They're not too highly motivated. They're satisfied. Just it's kind of like Greg Hudnall.
Greg Hudnall. I don't know
him. He worked in interlibrary loan and government documents for years. And one of the best people at government documents I've ever seen, with all those classification schemes and numbers.
Yes.
And of course, Miss Sarah Gleaves and Jean Wicker were the librarians up there.
Jean, I'm going to speak to him next week, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And what, who did you
good,
say?
Good luck.
Who did you say?
Sarah Helen Gleaves, G-L-E-A-V-E-S. She preceded Jean. They were co-librarians for a while. And then, of course, we have Rose Oneski. I don't know if anybody's talked about her, and I don't know if you could find her with a search warrant.
Oneski?
O-N-E-W-S-K-I, Oneski. And then we had Cindy Etkins, who was in the government documents just a little while. But
just let that ring.
We had some government documents that were sent to Science Library, especially the NASA documents when they...
Yes.
And a lot of the Index Medicus type things, the medical things. We got the National Cancer Institute periodical and mm-hmm. several of those. But now, Greg was so good at interlibrary loan, verifying citations is not easy, especially when the professor has no idea.
Right.
But Greg was very, very good at that. Of course, Susan Tucker Gore worked in interlibrary loan. And I can't remember. Has Teresa Baker died since you've been there?
She died December.
And she was such a quiet, unassuming person, and she had much more background than we realized.
Well, I'll tell you the connection between Teresa and this project. When I was first talking about doing this in Department of Public Services at a staff meeting, I asked all the other faculty, if you know people who were here, who are now retired, that you know I should talk to because I need to compile a list. And she sent me a whole list of people like Fina Simpson and you and, you know, all these people that I wouldn't have known about with all the contact information that she remembered about them. And that list became the impetus, really. That was the kernel of this project.
She was very thorough, and I was
Teresa
astounded
Baker.
When I read in the paper that she had passed
away.
Yeah,
it was very sad.
But she was so quiet and unassuming and... I really think maybe she would love to have been a librarian and had a department, but she did a good job while I was there in interlibrary loan. She was going to do anything well.
Well, she certainly helped me a lot with this project because it would have taken
I was astounded when I read that she had passed away.
And did you know Rob? Harbison.
No.
Who was the Owensboro? He worked at the Owensboro Library. He worked in periodicals, I think, for several years recently. He just died a few weeks ago, very suddenly also. So
I did not know him.
He probably came well after you retired, I think. Yeah. So you said there was another incident with secretary and the empty swimming pool where Cravens now is. The secretary.
She worked in technical services.
Oh, technical services.
I think her name was Malone. If no one's mentioned that, you need to. Susan might remember.
Susan Todd.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. She might remember. Susan's made a career out of tying up periodicals to go to the bindery. That was her job. I don't know what she's doing now.
Do you have any memories of Dr. Wassum? He was director during...
Well, I'm trying to think.
There, yeah.
I can remember. He did something at Sally Ann's wedding. If you haven't found out from her what he did.
I haven't talked to her yet. She's in a couple weeks.
She's still working at the Kentucky building so many days a week, I guess. I don't know. I go over to the Kentucky building a lot for genealogy, my niece and I do. And I think she has Jonathan Jeffries on speed dial. And she's a judge in Washington, D.C. But she picks up the phone and calls him. But A lot of people who retire, like Marv Levy, still works down
there. Yeah, I've got
him and Rebecca,
and
too.
And his wife next week,
Becky.
Yes.
Well, of course, now that was in the library marriage. That
was it? Well, tell us about that.
And, well, Becky was a librarian down at the ERC. I don't know if they still call it the Educational Resources Center. She was a librarian down there. She was a Shrewsbury from Ohio County. And when at the time that she came to Western, she was a mower. She was married to a professor in the geography department, and that marriage ended.
He was my geography professor.
Was he?
As an undergrad. Yeah, I graduated from Western in 85.
Well, Tink Moore.
Yes, yeah. He taught me geography.
Well, now that was her husband at the time that she came there, and of course, Marv came from Michigan.
Uh-huh.
He was a Ferner.
Yes.
And, well, it took us a while to warm up to Marv. And I think Marv had to learn a lot, you know, to warm up to us. But they did marry.
Mm-hmm.
And
are still married.
Yes, they are. They are. Of course, he works in the last I knew, he was still doing some time down at the Kentucky building, volunteering. I've never run into him down there. I run into Sally Ann and Connie Mills and some of those every time I go.
Connie's on my list. I have to get her.
And
Connie worked in the Kentucky Library for many years, yeah.
Well, of course, Pat Hodges worked in there in manuscripts. I guess she's on your list.
She's on the list.
Pat's husband was a Church of Christ minister here in Franklin.
Mm-hmm.
And just a sidebar, which is absolutely insignificant, but I was married for nearly 25 years, and as I've told people, my husband traded me in for a later model. And Pat told me several years, I think, after it happened, she said, they went to my husband to marry him. He was the minister at the Church of Christ, and said he refused to do it. And I said, thank you.
Oh, interesting.
Well, of course, you know, there are some churches who have pretty rigid rules about marrying divorced people.
Yes.
And they both were divorced, so.
So Pat Hodges' husband, who
was the minister of the Church of Christ here,
refused to marry your ex-husband to
his new intended. Yeah, I thought that was interesting. And I'm sure she don't mind me telling that.
Not at all.
But Pat is so proper.
Yes, she's a lady.
I guess Nancy Baird's on your list.
Oh, yes. Yes, she's Monday, I think. Mm-hmm.
And of course, unfortunately, Riley Hand is dead. And
mm.
Riley was one of those who struggled to get an ALA degree and went to Spalding in Louisville. I don't know if he ever did actually get the piece of paper that said he had an ALA degree. But
yes, Spalding College was an accredited library program for a long. Are they still?
I don't know. But now, that's something you can look into
in
your spare time.
I have to look that up. I have a friend who went there many years ago, too, and she had the same problem.
Well, now, where did you get your degree?
At University of Arizona in Tucson.
Okay, okay. Well, I don't think we've had anybody that's gone that far. I don't know where Pat Riddlesheimer went.
Riddlesheimer?
She was the...
Can you spell that?
Social sciences librarian. I think I looked that up, so I probably can.
Social sciences.
We had some very strong personalities, and of course, we had some people who were using Western as a stepping stone.
Sure.
And others who were content to stay there. Pat Riddlesheimer, REDDLESHEIMER, Riddlesheimer.
Thank you.
And, of course, if no one has told you, her clerical was Leon Benson, who was a registered architect, but he worked as clerical on the 8th and 9th floor.
Mm-hmm.
And he was associated with Joe Will, the architect there in town.
Oh, okay.
And he built, I think it's called a Unitarian Church now, out on the Nashville Road.
Yes, yes.
He was the architect on that.
Okay, yeah, they just did a big expansion there a couple of years ago, too.
Yeah, yeah. It's something else now, but it was, and of course his wife was in the finance end of the weather rebuilding, but I think she ended her career in the athletic department somewhere, Pat Vincent.
Mm-hmm.
She's another really good genealogist, the way that she's in the, and she's in the Daughters of the American Revolution, the way I know her too. Well, when you talk to Fina, be sure to ask her about the first time we went to lunch out at Helen Ski's after she retired.
I heard that they were, is that where they had picnics?
Well, we went out to Helen's for lunch, just 2 or 3 weeks after she retired. She was already feeling hung loose, you know. So it was Sally Ann and Fina, and I can't remember anyone else, but I went, and we had a real nice lunch, and we went in the living room, and Fina stood there, and she said, "Helen, what have you done to this living room? Something is different." And her husband was back in the house, and he says, "The ironing board is down." She had it up every day for years. She had to iron something before she went to work every day. The ironing board
so
is down.
So after she retired, she could take the ironing board out of the living room.
That's right. The ironing board is down. Oh, we had some wonderful times. Have you been any chance interviewed Mary that was in Dr. Bender's office?
Mary, was she a clerical?
Well, you know, Debbie Gabbard and Mary.
I've got Debbie on my list. Mary, can ask Debbie her name.
I'll have to pull it. I'll have to remember. But Mary, she was in this group, Peggy Wright and Fina and Helen, and there were several of us that were ran together, as it were. And
did this group have a name?
No.
No. It wasn't a gang, just a
That's
group.
Right, the gang. But
so no ghost stories? You never heard anybody else say?
No.
We have a lot of, it's not like Van Meter where they know.
Oh,
like,
yeah, they say there's a ghost over there, yeah.
But just sometimes
under the stage.
The students who are patrolling in the library, the student workers will say, "I don't like that room, it feels creepy." But, you know, no one ever has like a sighting or anything specific like that.
Well, there's small carrels and seminar rooms on nearly every floor, so there's a possibility that...
A sub-basement.
I don't think it ever happened in the library at Western, but I know that in the building, we had so many international students.
Yes.
And we had students whose living conditions maybe weren't what they would like for them to be. And, of course, we had nice restrooms, lounges on every floor with couches. We had vending machines. We had showers in the chemistry department where if you had an accident, you could take a shower.
Yeah.
And I'm convinced that there were people who lived in that building, because even though we had a patrol person that went around the whole building every night till 11 o'clock, by the time he started on the fourth floor, when he worked to the basement, somebody could have come in, and he would never know it. And then, of course, all the graduate students had keys to the building to come in to work on their research that had to be taken care of at 2 o'clock in the morning.
Sure.
So I'm confident that there were people who lived in that building.
I don't doubt it for a moment, yeah.
Did you ever have any classes down there?
In Thompson?
Mm-hmm.
I had I went to school there from 80 to 85, so I had intro to astronomy, I had a math class, I had physics, and
you were down there because you went to the planetarium and learned the constellations.
Yeah, all the constellations, right?
Yeah. And of course, you'd go up on the roof to look through the telescope, and there were so many neon signs you couldn't begin to see anything, you needed to get out. I think maybe they might have started going after Richard Hackness to look, because he had a telescope
out
at his house. But, of course, my brother's office was right around the corner from the science library. And
anything else we haven't talked about that you would like to add?
I don't see anything on the list here that I'm know enough to talk about.
Well, you have been a mine of information. You remember so
many. Well, now,
many
if you see
names.
Anything when you start working with it that you might want some more.
Yeah, well, I certainly will. And I want to thank you, Jean Allman, for sharing your time with us today for the Western Kentucky University Library's Oral History Project.
Thank you.
History.